So it's Obadiah chapter 1. It's 1 to 21, but I'm going to do 1 to 4. And it goes like this. This vision of Obadiah, this is what the sovereign Lord says about Edom. And I'm going to talk to you about who Edom is in a minute. We have heard a message from the Lord, an envoy was sent to the nations to say, "Rise, let us go against her for battle. See, I will make you small among the nations. You will be utterly despised. The pride of your heart has deceived you. You who live in the clefts of the rocks and make your homes on the heights, you who say to yourself, 'Who can bring me down to the ground?' Though you soar like the eagle and make your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord." And then if we move to Psalm 16:18, it says, "Pride goes before destruction, the haughty spirit before the fall." So Edom is who this message is for. But then partway through this small book, it switches, and then God starts saying, "All nations, pay attention." It's very quick. Talks about the problem, Edom, and then moves on as we go in here and says, "All nations, be very careful of basically how you treat the Israelites." But we're going to take that and say how you treat other people, because it applies here. And so they had, Edom lived up in the mountains, this group of people. This particular book is small enough, and it brings this great message to us where God is going to deal with the pride of Edom. God is going to deal with this issue. Now, let's talk about the people of Edom. Who are they? Okay, well, the people of Edom are descendants of Esau. Okay. Now, we could go through all that, but basically, Abraham and Sarah, if you don't know this, well, you know, maybe do some research on it, but I'm going to do it quickly. Father Abraham had many sons, right? And Sarah were parents to Isaac, okay? And Isaac marries Rebekah. I'll give you a little genealogy here. And they become parents to Jacob and Esau. I don't know if you've read the story, but Esau, the son of Isaac, gave his right to his brother. So Jacob and Esau were fighting in the womb. Genesis talks about that. And Esau traded his birthright. Back then, you had a birthright where you inherited everything from your father and all that. Gave it away because he was so hungry. He gave him basically a pot of beans. Okay, this is how the scripture goes in Genesis 25. And it was at this time when he traded this that Esau left and went to the hill country. And that eventually became the land of Edom. Because he was renamed that. And then Jacob, his brother, was named later Israel. So these two people groups grew larger. So it's basically an ancestry of families growing across. So it would be like your brother, he lived in Surrey, and your other brother lived in Abbotsford, okay? And they built their families. And throughout the generations, you know, in the States, they have this where there's feuds between families. This is what this is. This is a biblical feud. And these two people groups, Israel and Edom, would fight, okay? Fast forward a little bit later, enter the Babylonians. The Babylonians come in and they destroy Jerusalem. And when they destroy Jerusalem, that pushes the Israelites out. The Israelites, again, descendants of Jacob, being pushed out. Israel. Then Edom, who's living up in the hills, they see that the Babylonians have attacked the Israelites and taken over Jerusalem. So Edom, the ancestors, the relatives of Israel, attack other little cities along the way and start taking over more Israelite territory. And they kill them, and they kill family members is what they do. And so this battle is going on. And for years prior, anytime Israel would go near their land, they would get attacked by Edom. And God is saying, watch it. Now what happened They lived up in the hills, and that was very good for them, for Edom, to live in the hills, because as they looked down on people, they literally were looking down on people, and they had high ground. And in battle, when you have high ground, you've got a better position. That's just basic military. Get to high ground, you've got the advantage of those below. And so they were really arrogant about that, and they believed that they were better than everyone else around them, everyone else that surrounded them, all nations. So God originally says in this book, warning Edom, be careful of your pride, and then moves to say, all nations, do not mess with Israel. Do not mess with them. Leave them alone or else. And so the prophet Obadiah comes in and warns everyone, and that's where we are. So Edom's eventual breakdown was its own confidence, its own pride, its own arrogance, its own mistreatment of Israel. If God says, the concept of this is, if God says don't do this or don't touch that people or don't whatever, then don't do it. But Edom was like, no, we're going to do it. We're better. That's where pride comes in, and we can do it in our own life. We can be like, no, I'm right. You're wrong. And stick to our guns. And we get caught up in the fact of being right, that we have to be right, and we listen to nothing else. As I've gotten older, I used to be a very black and white thinking person. It's wrong or it's right. That's it. But as I've gotten older, there's some gray areas that have popped up. I don't know, have you noticed this? Anyone who's over, it doesn't matter what age you are. Have you noticed? There's some areas where it's like, that's not actually a big deal. But God said, this is a big deal. So I'm going to worry, that's the thing I'm going to focus on, not these other things. We were, and I mentioned this before, we talk about preferences. So what you like as far as music, movies, books, and whatever isn't my preference necessarily. And that's okay. But yet we bring those preferences into a church setting or into a Christian setting, and then over time we make them law. We make them theology, where they're not actually in here. They're just our own preference. And we can do that with music styles. We can do that with preaching styles. We can do that with, it used to be a big deal about the type of translation you would use in Scripture. And people would fight and say, back in my day, the only Bible is the King James Bible. The Lord himself wrote it in King James. No, I actually didn't. There's nothing wrong with the King James if you like the old style. Sometimes I prefer some of the words they use. They're better. They're stronger. But that doesn't mean the whole thing is better than an NIV or the Message, which is a paraphrase, which helps people understand the concept of the Scripture they're reading. And so our preferences become theology. And that's kind of where Israel went a lot. I don't know if you recognize this, but even in the New Testament, the Jewish people have so many laws that they have to follow. And a lot of them are not what God really asked them to do. And we do the same thing. We need to be careful with what we make as a preference and what we like and a style. You know, I bet you if I go into your homes, there'll be things that you decorate that aren't my style. If you come into mine, you'd be like, why would he do that? I'd be like, talk to Michelle. I don't decorate. But you might not feel that. So preferences. And so throughout this, we pick and choose what we want, and I don't think we should. But this morning I want to focus specifically on pride. Proverbs chapter 16 verse 18 says, pride goes before destruction, the haughty spirit before a fall. Pride is a contributor and a massive contributor to pretty much everyone's relational problems. Do you want the secret? It's pride. You have pride. If you get into a fight with your spouse, friend, it's because you want to be right. And we have to be careful. Pride, like all sins, is a problem right here in our heart. in our whole being. And there's so many scriptures that talk about how pride results in shame and disgrace. Proverbs 11:2. It's a narrow-minded mindset. Proverbs 5:12-13. The haughty set of eyes is a prideful person. Proverbs 6. It brings strife, self-exaltation, and self-destruction. Pride promises a lot to you, especially self-gratification. But what it doesn't tell you is that it also brings loneliness. It also brings loneliness. Perhaps there are some areas in your life where pride has snuck in, where we feel we are invincible and uncertain because it's a certain area of familiarity. I really hope that we never lose sight of the fact that God enables each of us with the daily strength, with the daily breath, to just get things done. He's the one who gives us that. And like I said earlier, part of Edom's pride was where they were located. They also had great resources in that land, and so they were very rich and very arrogant. They mistreated the nation of Israel. They denied Israel passage through their land. They continually fought against them. And they even went to the Babylonian rulers and counseled them on how to attack Jerusalem. Edom never felt any remorse. Their pride was so strong. They didn't feel any regret for their arrogance. They even felt they had so much control over their own fate because of their location and military strength. And you can find that in Obadiah 1:3-4, which we read. They were so self-focused and overconfident that they couldn't see that they were their own worst enemy. And we can be there. I don't know if you ever know of who Muhammad Ali was. He was a boxer back in the day. And I don't know if you know this about his life, but he was afraid to fly when he first started out. Like, extremely afraid to fly. And as he became the champ and became stronger and beat more people, he kind of got over his fear. He became more comfortable with flying. But with that being comfortable, he became very arrogant about it. And there was a time that he was on the plane and the flight attendant came by and she said, "Excuse me, sir, you're going to have to buckle up." And he said, "Superman don't need no seatbelt." And the flight attendant said, "Superman don't need no plane. Buckle up." You see, sometimes we can be blinded by pride, blinded by how great we are and how good we did, how well we did. And when we think our opinion is the only right and only option possible, we become very prideful. When we act like we have all the answers or think we know better than everybody else, that is pride. Now, that doesn't mean when we're talking to someone and trying to discuss something that you got pride in there. It's when you put yourself before them, when you put your feelings before them, when you hurt them to make them feel like they're less. You can have a discussion. The second we see ourselves being affected by circumstances, or we think we are better than someone else, that is when pride has taken hold of us. When we put ourselves before everyone else. How do I know this? Romans chapter 12, 13, it says, "For by the grace given to me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you." Do not think you are higher than anyone else. Whether it's status, money, position, how you look, that is irrelevant. It's ironic that Edom believed they were so wise, and yet they didn't even see being destroyed by their own enemies. They didn't see it coming. And it's funny that if you look for Edom today, you won't find it. It's not there. But who's there? Israel. So how can we avoid being prideful? Very quickly. Acknowledge the strengths in others. There are times when I'm talking with people and we're discussing something and a strength pops out in how they communicate. And I don't do it all the time, and I promise myself I do it more. But when they come with a very good argument or a very good point, I need to tell them that. I need to say, you know what, that's a good point. I'm going to think that through instead of going, what do you know? Not that I do that all the time. But I need to be better at that. So acknowledge the strengths and say, wow, you're really good at that. Listen to what others have to say. How many times do you cut people off? Because you want to get your point in. I do it. I've done it. And the second I do it, I'm mad I did it, and then I keep talking. Anybody? And I'm like, I shouldn't have said anything there. And then as I'm driving away from wherever I've been, I'm like, there was like five times I should have just kept my mouth shut. Why did I even interrupt? That was silly. So listen to what others have to say. Thirdly, admit your own mistakes. But what if you don't make any? See? It's funny, right? That's when I get kicked in the shins. Admit your own mistakes. Can you say sorry when you make a mistake? It's hard. It's hard sometimes. Michelle's giving me the eyebrow right now. But it's important. Say sorry. Admit it. You walk away and you're like, all I need to do is say sorry. But yet I didn't. And I stuck to my guns anyways. We've all done it. I'm trying to be better at it. And the fourth thing is put others first. See, if you actually do the fourth point here, if you put others before yourself, everything else just falls into line because you're thinking about them. And we've talked throughout our series, and in every series, there's this theme that is popping up. I don't know if you've noticed it, but there's a theme, is that it's not all about you, and it's not all about me. It's about the bigger picture. There's a bigger picture. That's why we have plastered above the doors when you leave, go and be. We don't say, have a mediocre day and don't talk about Jesus on your way out saying, Jesus, have a good lunch. That's too many words, and I don't know what the right font would be, so I can't do that. But when you leave, we want you to go and be what we've talked about here. Go and be the church. Be the church. Not be West Winds. Be the church of God. You're part of the family. When you leave, go and be the church. So acknowledge what others have their strengths in. Listen to what others have to say. Admit your mistakes and put others first. Those are four things you get to pick from today to walk out that door and go and be that. That's the kind of church I know you are, but we need to continue to be, because it's not about us. And when I say that, some Christians get mad. They don't like it because they want it to be about them. I'm here to tell you, this church won't be like that. We're not going to pander to people's petty differences and preferences. It's not like that. We're here to serve each other. And that's it. And we're here to help people. And if we have problems or wrongs with others, we discuss it biblically. We use Matthew to walk through our differences and to work out our problems. We don't act like we've got it all together because we don't. Not one of us in this room has it all together. Some are a little better, but we're all messed up. And that's okay, because I like being up with a whole bunch of messed up people. It's fun, because then I can be messed up and nobody judges me. But move forward. Go and be the church and put pride aside. Do this first. Put others first. Everything else will fall in line.